And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right. I'm talking about this show goes way down south of Birmingham, way up north of Huntsville, from Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. Like, we cover, that's a big chunk of the SEC, Boomer.
That's a big chunk. And we got a great game in the SEC this weekend.
Oh, yeah. We do.
We do.
There's a lot of hype about that game.
I know.
I mean, I'm trying not to get, like, too stirred up being the Auburn fan in the room. You know, you look at it and go, okay, they're definitely playing better than they were before, but beating Western Kentucky and beating Alabama are two different things.
Well, it's going to be a good – it's always a good game, so it'll be a great game no matter what.
You know what's interesting, though, too? There's a lot of talk – I hadn't thought about this until just now. There's a lot of talk about – and I'm pretty sure I'm right on the timing on this. There's a lot of talk about times when, like, a former assistant coach for Saban plays against him, like Lane Kiffin or whoever. But this is going to be one where the current acting head coach is a former player against Nick Saban. I think Carnell was there when Saban was coaching,
yeah,
wasn't he?
I'm pretty sure that
could have been the Mike Shula era. I'm not sure. Because that's, well, let's see. That's back when Brody Croyle was also recruited, same year. Mm-hmm. I feel like Brody went down there under Mike Shula, now that I think about it.
He did, during Mike Shula's era.
Yeah, he did. And then did DeBose come before or after Mike Shula?
Ooh,
he came before.
Before.
All right. So we're Mike Shula, then Nick Saban followed Shula, right?
Right. Nick Saban remembers Cadillac Williams, the player.
Okay.
But
Saban was also down at LSU? Where was he before? Saban.
LSU. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after that, Miami Dolphins.
Why are we talking about this?
I don't know. I'm not even a Bama fan.
Fine bomb, eat your heart out. We got all the, yeah, anyway. Okay. Hey, let's move on. First part of the Triple Dipper. I am sitting here. By the way, I can see you now on the split screen. So usually I'm looking at the back of you, and now I'm looking over there. I see the split screen because if you're not watching the live stream, you're missing something.
It
is pretty cool. Boomer's really been like taking tech to the next level here in the studio,
and it's only going to get better. I might add. I'm working on a few things.
I'm a little scared. Cool. We got like five cameras in here. So yeah. By the way, if you want to do that, our website is www.rightsideradio.org. We live stream the show every day. Especially if we have a guest in studio, you can see them. Next week we have a special, significant, nationally known guest that we're going to have on. You're going to want to probably watch that. Mm-hmm. We had Ted Nugent on that way, but we stream the show every day, and it's kind of crazy because I'll be sitting here and I'll see movement out the corner of my eye and look over and it's me. And it's like, oh, that was me on the video. But now, Boomer, you got the split screens, and anytime we have a guest, even if they're calling in, you put their picture up, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm trying to spice it up a little bit. So
I'm saying, it's good stuff. All right, let's do this. The 10th Amendment, Dipper number one. So here's the thing. In a environment like what we're in right now, when, as a conservative, I see an administration that is determined to basically browbeat everything conservative into submission, I have been saying since the day this show started that the firewall against federal overreach are the states. Literally. Not by a little bit. That's why when you see things like, I'm going to have a vaccine mandate, and I'm going to mandate schools do all these things, and the CDC wants schools to close, and Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis says no and doesn't do it. And he wasn't the only one. I mean, Kristi Noem didn't shut down South Dakota. I'm trying to think of who else, but there were several states like that. Arizona held out, and then Alabama did some things right, too. I'll be honest, I was frustrated with Governor Ivey in quite a few ways during the pandemic, but I will say this. She put an end to the enhanced unemployment compensation earlier than a lot of states, and we also opened our schools back up. States are the firewall against federal overreach. Why? Because the 10th Amendment says so. I mean, the 10th Amendment is very solid. It simply says the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. So what you got to look at there is the concept that we as Alabamians or our neighboring Georgians or Mississippians or Floridians, Tennesseans. We've got the opportunity for self-governance at a more localized level. We can thumb our nose sometimes at the federal government because they get too big for their britches. Now, does the federal government have a place? Certainly. I mean, the national defense is the national defense. The national budgets are the national budgets. The interstate system is, you know, the federal interstate system. There are things that are required of a federal government. I don't have any problem with that. I'm not a separatist. I'm not looking to see us, you know, secede from the union. Nah, forget that. What I am saying, though, is this. There are times when the culture of a state or the laws of a state, or for that matter, just literally the people of the state don't want that thing from D.C. They don't want that regulation. They don't want that burden being foisted upon them. And the 10th Amendment gives our state legislature the opportunity to rule and our attorney general the opportunity to act and our governor the opportunity to issue executive orders and resist those overreaches. And it's necessary right now more so than ever. Red states like Alabama, especially red states like Florida, that have been pushing back and pushing back, they do so under the auspices of the 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. That Bill of Rights, man, I'm going to tell you right now, those guys, they knew what they were doing. And they knew what they were doing in this case because they did not want to get back to the idea of a centralized, all-powerful, king-like government. They didn't want that. And so they literally decided that one of the amendments in the Bill of Rights would be the 10th. Now, case in point right now, why the 10th Amendment is very much in focus right now because of abortion. So the Dobbs ruling came down earlier this year, and it said literally that the question of abortion is now devolved to the states. There is no constitutional right to an abortion. That was always farcical. It needed to be overturned. And so that has now been devolved to the states. Now, Senator Lindsey Graham, inexplicably, I don't know what he was doing, introduced a congressional ban on abortion after 15 weeks of pregnancy. It went nowhere because the Supreme Court's already acted. The states don't want Lindsey Graham dropping in legislation on this. But here's where the fight is. The fight is now that there is no codification at the congressional level of any law regarding abortion. Therefore, the states are allowed to take a stand. So when you see things happening like, I don't know, the Attorney General of Alabama pushing back against the VA for saying it's going to do abortions in Alabama. No, I'm sorry. Our state laws say otherwise. You do not have the authority. So the original hope of the Constitution, I've got an article here from spokesman.com, dated September of this year, September 18th. It says the original hope of the Constitution was that it would be clear that powers not given to the national government would remain with the states. But some people were concerned at the time that the national government would end up assuming powers that weren't intended to be given to it. You think? We haven't seen that at all. I mean, when's the last time you saw Biden say he couldn't do something because of the states? Never. In fact, what he tends to do more often than not is go, well, I know that my legal counsel says this may not stand constitutional muster, but I'm going to do it anyway. Please. The 10th Amendment has so many examples of when it is kicked in. Like, for instance, in 1997, the federal government attempted to require state and local law enforcement officers to run background checks on people wanting to buy guns. Supreme Court said, no, 10th Amendment, can't do it. The Affordable Care Act was being debated at the time about the fact that it was a 10th Amendment issue. That's why it was shocking when Chief Justice John Roberts crafted a workaround and said that, no, it's actually part of the federal taxation right. No, it was never intended to be. He put things in there that weren't even part of the arguments. The states were resisting it on the 10th Amendment, believing they had the claim. He had to craft a workaround to get it to work. But the Republican attorney generals right now are in the Republican legislatures. I hope you heard the show. If you didn't, it's on podcast. You can find all of our podcasts at all of the... By the way, if you're a podcaster, or if you just want to hear a segment over again, yesterday we spent an hour in studio with who is about to be the next Speaker of the House of Representatives for the state of Alabama, Nathaniel Ledbetter. Good dude. Came on, talked about a lot of stuff. One of the things we didn't get a chance to talk to him about is pushing back on federal mandates, pushing back against federal overreach. Now, we had a little bit of that because I did point out that I was really pleased when the state of Alabama, the legislature, passed a bill, even without the governor wanting it, and she had to sign it once they passed it, in this case, because she couldn't avoid it, but that said that Alabama will not have a vaccine passport. We weren't going down that road. So we set ourselves in the right spot, and that's the legislative action. That's the legislature saying, hey, federal government, if you try to do this, we've already got a law in place that says don't. StarsandStripes.com, story dated yesterday. Republican state attorneys general promised challenges to the VA's new abortion rules. So here we are. The state laws trump. The Supreme Court says the states can regulate abortion at the state level. And now 15 state Republican attorneys general, have warned that they would challenge recent Department of Veterans Affairs rules attempting to circumvent state law to do abortions in VA clinics. They're trying to claim they have some type of sovereign territory, some kind of sanctuary, some kind of, you know, fortress in the wilderness as they do abortions on state land. No, it doesn't work that way. 15 state attorneys generals are saying, no, that's a profound moral question that is left to the people of the states, and we have already acted on that one. Same thing we're seeing right now. A story from 1819 News came out two days ago. Our own Attorney General Steve Marshall joined 21 other state attorneys general to petition the Biden administration to drop the healthcare worker vaccine mandate. I mean, this is what happens. When you see federal overreach, the states can act against it. They can take a stand. When you see things happening, the legislature can pass laws. You know why Alabama is a virtually abortion-free state? Because we passed a law under the expectation that one day Roe would be overturned. I was proud to be there. We passed a law. And then we also, by the way, embedded it in our Constitution that there is no right to a abortion under Alabama's Constitution. And then they overturned Roe, and bam, we had what's called a trigger law. It was already in place. The 10th Amendment. Marshall and other states' attorneys general stated in their petition about the healthcare worker mandates that even if the rule made sense at the time, it has long since outlived its utility, that Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services should cast the rule and all related guidance in the trash bin where it belongs. And they're going after it because it affects 10.4 million healthcare workers at 76,000 facilities nationwide. They're doing it. All right, listen, Boomer, take the break right now. We'll come right back, and I'll tell you about an article I just pulled from The Federalist on this very issue. It says strong state federalism is the best path forward right now for the GOP and the whole country. 10th Amendment, folks. Sovereign right. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Making it cool to be a conservative. All right, so I'm in this number one of the Triple Dipper. The 10th Amendment. I mean, it's so easy for us to think about the First Amendment, you know, the Fifth Amendment. They're looking at some of the Second Amendment. We some of the ones that we are the most familiar with because they get talked about. But people don't realize sometimes that I think right now, one of the greatest protections you have against a liberal federal government is the 10th Amendment. Now, certainly, when you speak something personally, you have a right to your opinion, you have the right to assemble, you have the right to worship, you have all these rights, you have the right to bear arms, you have these things carry with them the idea of a personal level of civil liberty. You can do these things. And if somebody tries to claim that you can't, you can hold that up like a lantern in the night and you can say, I do, because here's where it says so. One of the ones that people forget quite often, though, is the 10th Amendment gives the whole body of people that comprise a state the opportunity to defend its congregate self against a federal government that is overreaching in its power and scope. That's a big, hairy deal, y'all. I mean, that's big doings. When you've got the ability for an entire state, in Alabama, 5.1 million people, to look at the federal government and go, no, that is not the way it works. And y'all need to just back off. And our attorney general is our chief lawyer. He's going to make sure it works. And our legislature has already passed a law, and they don't want to do it. And, oh, by the way, the governor of the state says they are not going to sign that document. When those things happen, you have the 10th Amendment to give you the power to do it. It's called federalism. So here's an article from the Federalist magazine. Came out yesterday, 2 days ago. The title of it is Strong State Federalism is the Best Path Forward Now for the GOP and the Country. It says the 2022 midterms were as much of an indictment of bloated national leadership on both sides of the aisle as they were of anything. People did not overwhelmingly vote overwhelmingly for incumbents because they think the country's headed in a good direction. Goes on to talk about the fact that some incumbents stayed in because they didn't know, you know, what the options were. There was a lot of information being transmitted back and forth in the negative campaign ads that scared some people. But here's the deal. They point out none of the GOP midterm momentum, because there was some, none of it was national. It says the most interesting elements of the midterms were not in fighting over control of Congress, because no one has much faith in Mitch McConnell, least of all many of his coalition. It was the elections for state office that saw massive momentum build up around long-shot Republican challengers from places like New York to Michigan to even Oregon. Even though the GOP gubernatorial candidates in those states did not oust their incumbent party opponents, they tapped into an energy that national Republicans have failed to generate. What they're saying here is the level of activity, the level of energy that Republicans could look at as being the win were at the state level. Florida being the biggest example. Florida became like a microcosm of what we hoped that the overall election was going to be. In fact, a lot of people were saying Florida was the bellwether. They knew Florida's results would come in quickly, and since they were on Eastern time, we would see them pretty quick, and then that would be a bellwether towards the rest of the nation. We were all kind of stoked because we're watching the results come in like, man, look at that, and then it's like flittered out everywhere else. It says, but the election did make these two things clear. The national establishment GOP has failed to rally behind a resonant, positive national agenda that motivates voters. And it failed to fight effectively enough against Democrat vote-harvesting machinery that's been put in place in states that were until recently swing states. Republicans in Congress, it says, and especially in leadership, have joined with Democrats to pass leftist wish lists. Arguably, it says the GOP will either have to reform the election laws or match the Democrats' efforts to harvest ballots. But here's the deal. Where we have a win, where we have a model, the voters, it says, appear to place more hope and enthusiasm in state-level leaders than in Washington. It says credit a myriad of factors for DeSantis' blowout win in Florida, but he's certainly become a model figure for strong state leadership that reminds the federal government that checks and balances work between states and Washington. COVID lockdowns, by the way, were one of the biggest ones. I mean, you can look back at COVID and go, wow, who knew? But here's I highlighted this one. I got highlights and stars by some of this stuff. It says, in our current political climate, at least, it also means that Republicans are never going to save the country by winning majorities that put McConnell in charge of the Senate. The most momentous way forward against the excesses of our gargantuan national government right now is from Main Street to the 50 different state capitals, not up on Pennsylvania Avenue. The best way to fix a system from the outside is from the outside. Steady pressure from the states, reminding the federal government it can't boss their citizens around. And then it cites James Madison in the Federalist Papers, saying the state governments may be regarded as constituent and essential parts of the federal government, whilst the latter is no wise essential to the operation or organization of the former, meaning the states are part of the federal, but the federal is not part of the state. 10th Amendment, folks, don't forget. You do have a say as an entire state against an overreaching federal government. All right, we're moving to number 2 of the Triple Dipper. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.